I think something else is going to happen.
You think? That is a bold prediction.
Everybody, we're Sorkin it in. Watching the newsroom, please take just a minute. It's a podcast. Aaron Sorkin might choose about Will and Mackenzie making the news. You're Sorkin in it.
Folks, we did it. We're here at season two of the newsroom, and I couldn't be happier to have my friend and yours, Lex Friedman. Hi, Lex.
Hi. I couldn't be happier to be joining you, my friend, and yours, Brian Ward.
Wait, he's my friend? Oh, I see what we're doing. You know, we've been anticipating season two coming for weeks now, especially just as things wound up on sometimes a dour note, sometimes a semi-exciting note, a couple of cliffhangers, but we're here. We did it.
We did make it, Brian. And I'm sure we both have lots of thoughts on season two, episode one. Regular listeners know I have been eagerly anticipating season two for my confidence that it could fix all the flaws of season one. But here's what happened in season two, episode one. First thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers, which I was surprised to learn was a Shakespeare quote. I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Me too.
So we've got Will and various staffers from Newsroom, the Newsnight, being questioned by a lawyer, Marcia Gay Harden. We have Will getting pulled from the September 11th anniversary coverage. Mm. We have Jim volunteering to go work on the Romney campaign as a way to get the heck away from Maggie. We've got Maggie and Don breaking up. And we've got Neil infiltrating, investigating, getting in deep with Occupy Wall Street. And we also have a vision from the future of Maggie with hair that shocks lawyers to their very core. So an action-packed episode.
Yeah, but you know what it also starts off with? A new title sequence.
A new my note in all caps says way better credits.
Yeah, it's good. It's like maybe twice as long as it needs to be, but completely unobjectionable.
It's the same song or it's a different song? I couldn't remember.
It's different.
It is a different
song. It's different.
Okay, good.
But instead of like scrolling through kind of semi-black and white stuff of, you know, satellites going by and Cronkite and everything, we just have like stills and quick little shots of things around the newsroom, which, you know, it totally fine.
Felt a lot better.
Yeah.
I had no beef with it.
I liked the coffee spilling. There was coffee spilling slowly across a piece of paper. I was like, yeah, that probably happens.
Yeah. Happens here in my house, in my podcast studio. So we open meeting Rebecca Halliday, played by Marcia Gay Harden, mm-hmm. who is a lawyer at the time, going deep in it with Will, who is being his usual snarky self. Snarky slash sexist self. Mm-hmm. And boy, my first note was, one, it seemed like potentially a reference to the Dan Rather story, but I didn't do any research to see what came in what order. Do you remember when Dan Rather had some scandal wherein he had reported on, I guess it was some old paper surrounding George W. Bush and something or other, and then it was clear that it had been not typed on a typewriter like it was supposed to be,
but I forgot
Microsoft
about that.
Word-style smart quotes. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe it was a reference to that. As the story went on, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be a reference to that. My note is, man, are we thrown in deep right away? Because I feel like we don't actually know what the hell's going on. And I feel like we end the episode not really knowing what the hell's going on, which is not my favorite way to feel. I don't like, there's always a very common thing in all kinds of entertainment where you can be thrown into a story where you don't know what's going on. And then over time you figure it out. And sometimes, depending on how they draw it out, it makes me mad. in anything. Like, I don't like this feeling of not knowing what's going on. Like, somebody tell me what's happening. And this didn't get all the way to that point of me being annoyed, but I was worried for much of the episode, am I missing things? Like, did I miss some key things? Because I feel like we do end not knowing, but we know that there's a nerve gas story. Mm-hmm. They recall the story. They recant the story. There's Maggie in Uganda. There's a new haircut. There's the Geneva confusion. There's Jim Harper. There's Dantana. There's a lot of things all happening at once. And we get some of those details, but we still don't actually know exactly what went wrong, right? Or did I miss it?
No, you're totally right. And it's it reminds me a little bit about these puzzles that you make, where Lex does these puzzles. They're New York Times style puzzles. I'm sure you've heard about them. The collections puzzles where A well-designed version of them is one where the person figuring it out, like, it's hard enough that it doesn't feel too easy, but it's also not so hard that they're just frustrated and that they feel kind of smart for figuring it out, right? Like, that's the threading the needle of it. And anytime I do one or any kind of puzzle like that, and I feel really smart at the end of it, like, ah, you know, good puzzle that time. This one,
yeah.
It's going to take a few episodes before we get all the pieces together. And Sorkin talked about this first episode as like, I want to have like a whole season long of a mystery instead of just one that kind of wraps itself up by the end of it with a little bit of a thread connecting the episodes together. So we're not meant to understand everything, and that can be kind of frustrating. It also makes me kind of wonder, did they bunch these up and like have three of them drop on HBO at the same day or something? I don't know.
No. And I don't know if you saw the story, but I did some digging, and apparently Sorkin had written and they had filmed the first two episodes of the season. And then he's like, hey, I don't like where this is going and this isn't going to work. Can we redo it?
Whoa.
Can I tweak things? So they reshot tons. They rewrote a bunch of it. And HBO said, we'll allow you to do that, but you're going to have to cut an episode. So the reason season two is 9 episodes is because Sorkin was unhappy with his own work on the first two. So there's like lost episodes of the show that went a different direction. And I thought, maybe that's what some of what we're seeing, because it feels unnecessarily loose-ended at the moment. Mm-hmm. But so we meet Jerry Dantana.
Oh, yeah.
Who's interesting. We have kind of an abandoned sequence here where, like, we get... They're doing the show. And then we get some lines that once again reveal to me Sorkin's lack of understanding of how technology works. Like, it sounds like how the non-tech savvy people in my life deal with technology. Shit, I'm losing the board. And like the board, the soundboard, or the
all the lights are blinking
to
on
show
and off.
The problem starts blinking lights. which is how it indicates you're losing me. And then somebody asks, is the mainframe down? Like, it was really like the dumbest version of ChatGPT, smarter mm-hmm. child on AOL Instant Messenger, coming up with what's a good tech question. Do we need to defrag the hard drive? Like, it was hilarious to me. But we also get what I consider one of the highlights of the episode in that moment. Every time we cut back to Will, who is mostly blissfully unaware of these technical issues, what's he doing, Brian?
He's singing a little song to himself, right?
Do you know what song he's singing?
No, what was he singing?
He was singing Friday by Rebecca Black, the YouTube viral sensation.
Wow.
Friday by Rebecca Black, which I just loved. And he was getting some of the words wrong, which I also mm-hmm. loved. What I thought that scene was trying to do, when the board keeps failing and Mackenzie is trying to cut, like, they patch in that guy who's at a Benihana.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got the wrong audio, and she, like, seamlessly has them edit in him speaking on a phone microphone, and it sounds just as good as his VO.
There's no way.
But then she's figuring out, turn to this camera, and we're going to use the TV behind you, and it's because we've lost the ability to do picture-in-picture, which is nonsense to me. But I thought all of it was meant to show, hey, look how competent and talented Mackenzie is. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've shown her to be a buffoon for an entire season, but now look at this quick rapid fire talent. That's what I thought the whole point of that thing was,
you know. And I think, like, mostly effective. Like, the things that she suggested they do, you know, like bypass this and plug this into that, like, of course I don't know how control rooms work. I'm sure someone who does would say none of that makes any sense, in the same way that we're like, control that soundboard is not going to blink if it's dying. That still felt honoring her intelligence, I suppose, as opposed to the silliness we've seen a lot more. So maybe we'll get more of that. That sounds good.
Then we meet Charlie in his start to season two with the line, hey, money skirt.
Ugh. Okay, so some things we've made progress since last season, some things totally not.
And I think that there was some attempt to... it's not whitewashing, to male chauvinistic washing, mm-hmm. to do something to be like, look, Sloane's in on it, which is, again, a very Sorkin-y kind of thing where we talked about this when we were discussing season one, where sometimes on the West Wing, when Sam would be lightly harassing, if that's a thing. That woman who was their lawyer.
Ainsley Hayes.
Yeah, Ainsley Hayes, that's right. And so when they do that, and then she'd be like, no, it's not sexist. I love that he is objectifying me. And so now we have Sloan being like, you know, someday HR is going to see this, and then I'm going to bring you down. And like she's good-naturedly enjoying being one of the guys, where being one of the guys means being an attractive woman getting harassed by Charlie. Didn't like it. Choose to ignore it. Choose to believe that it didn't happen. It does not stay in my headcanon of the newsroom. Didn't like it. I have a question for you, though, Brian, because now we get to Charlie. In a scene that I thought both Charlie and Will act well, perform well, we get Charlie pulling Will from the 9/11 coverage, going back to when he referred to, I guess, the Tea Party or certain Republicans as the American Taliban. We saw that happen last season. I feel like it's being made a much bigger deal in retrospect than it was when it happened. Like, I feel like now it's blown up to this thing that it wasn't considered when we first saw it. But maybe I'm wrong. I'm curious what your take is.
I'm trying to remember which episode that happened in. It was in one of the last ones, right? Maybe it was even the last episode of the season. I do remember that being kind of like the button on the end of a scene. And it did kind of like come across as semi provoking, although we had seen all 10 episodes of season one where he was provoking people left and right and stuff.
And yes, you're right, he does say it in the season finale is what he calls him, the American Taliban.
And I think that's kind of how it ends, and it's like, you know, I'm like, he's taking it from maybe 10 to 11 or something, his coverage, but we see none of the fallout from it. We see no one like give him like a high five, like, ooh, you nailed it, or ooh, wow, that was really that was a bridge too far or something. But I guess we're here a couple months later where there's been some fallout. But I think you're right that we could have connected those dots a little bit more, or maybe, I don't know. It feels kind of muted, the response that we're getting, and it's just all indirect.
There's a silliness to it to me. He said this, so we're going to keep letting him broadcast the news each night, but pull him from 9/11 coverage when the Taliban was not involved in the attacks of 9/11.
Right.
But he can't be that but he can do all the rest of news coverage. It's just this one thing that he can't do because that's too hot. Like, it just seemed crazy to me. I didn't like it, but as much as I like the Charlie Will scene, you know what scene was even better to me, Brian?
Do tell, Lex.
I really, really liked the scene between Jim and Maggie.
Ooh, yeah.
Where she's basically coming, and I was impressed by Jim's astuteness in the scene, his self-awareness and his Maggie awareness, because she's like, I want to go back to the way things were. And he says, I don't want to go back to the way things were. And then he's like, at this point, this conversation is inappropriate. And she's like, yeah, but things are so awkward. And he's like, it's only awkward because you want it to be. And she's like, that's a big accusation. And he does not recant in any way. And then she says, all right, we'll try again tomorrow. And it's a good scene because he is not wrong. Like, he does want to be with Maggie. He can't because she is, at this point in the episode, happily with Don. And he's calling out that she misses the tension of him wanting her and her secretly acknowledging that she wants him. And I thought it was fair. I thought it was a fair thing as written. I thought it was a fair thing as performed. And I thought they both did really nice jobs in that scene. And I was Team Jim in that one.
I agree. And I think, like, I don't blame Maggie for wanting what she wants. Like, I'm sure you felt this all throughout your youth, where multiple people were interested in your affection.
Oh, story of my life.
And it feels kind of good to be able to do both, you know, and that probably feels really comfortable for her too, because she really does like Jim probably as a friend and as more than a friend. And losing a friend while also losing that affection has got to be pretty painful. So I don't blame her. Still on Team Jim, because he's right. It is inappropriate. And her idea of like, well, let's just try again tomorrow has got to be just torture for him.
And And I like the idea that he's trying once again to explicitly call her out for a mistake she made. Like, you didn't do the right vetting of this thing, whatever. But I liked all of that. So Jim volunteers to go work the Romney campaign because it's a way to get away from Maggie is what the clear implication is. And I was, I felt like in 2023 it was believable, but of the era, I was surprised that it would be believable on The Newsroom to have the Romney press person be such an ass to Jim. Not letting him on the bus.
Yeah.
Screwing with him and being super sarcastic. Like, he can say, and he said, I didn't like that American Taliban comment very mm-hmm. much, which Jim clearly had nothing to do with. And like, they're going to continue to need coverage. And Newsnight is talking to conservative voters and they're in a primary campaign. It makes no sense to me that Romney would be like, we're going to make life difficult for you. Like, I found that shocking. It, like I said, it does feel 2023-ish. I believe anything now.
Sure.
But I didn't know if it rang true or not. Maybe I have just nostalgia for 2011.
Also, like, Romney was far more of a grown-up, yeah, and still is, I suppose, than many of the people in Washington.
Only more so.
I mean, he didn't cut him off of the campaign trail. He just says you got to drive yourself. And perhaps this is a one-time penance. I don't know. But you are right, and we saw this from the mock debate episode where the Republican or the RNC is saying, we need Newsnight. We need ACN because they are they're squarely in the moderates. They've got both sides of the people of the aisle watching them, and they're the ones we need to court the most. So you would kind of assume that like maybe they would hold their nose and let Jim on the bus.
Yeah. So I thought that was unusual. There's a thing that happens more and more in The Newsroom that I think is cute. And a little cloying, but I like it anyway, which is how late into the episode they'll show you what date in recent history we're looking at. And so then we find out that this is around August 24th, 2011. Also the day that Steve Jobs resigned as CEO of Apple, which they make mm-hmm. reference to. Tim Cook took over. He's still there. A couple years later, 2 years after this episode, Aaron Sorkin's movie Steve Jobs would come out. Right before they put the date up is when we actually formally meet the previously only mentioned by lawyers, Jerry Dantana.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the scene with Jerry Dantana and Mackenzie and Will. I thought Will did some great comedy. That was like Dumb and Dumber Will in that moment. I really enjoyed it. He's like, of course I remember him. And then behind his back, he's like, I don't know who this is. Mouthing and like hamming it up so much. I just loved it. I love that whole
thing. And he calls him Terry right after that. So good.
Yes. And then, I don't know, we get into the production team meeting for tonight's show. And there's a weird thing to me with the TV series, The Newsroom, that we're watching, where they clearly want to keep Don around, but there's no reason for Don to be there. And so they force the issue. And it's like, oh, well, Don's going to be here. Think of this as like that they're our follow-up act. And he's like, no, think of you guys like our opener. And there's like some rivalry between the two of them. I don't know. It's just, it seems very forced that Don is always there on a TV show he doesn't work on.
Yeah. There was a little bit of comedy there where the Washington office was on speakerphone or something and Mackenzie just made fun of him or something. Like, nobody cares about that.
She doesn't know that they're online. Yeah. Pretty good. And then we get to another news broadcast. And a couple things, I guess, are supposed to be revealed during this news broadcast. We know that Sloan doesn't like the drone strikes that Obama's been ordering. We know that Will disagrees with Sloan, I guess, on this.
Yeah.
We get to see Will being, I thought, a dick to Sloan on the air in a way that I would understand it more if it was with pundits. But when it's with his colleague who he likes, like, to be a jerk to her, I did not appreciate. And then it's also, I guess, showing that Dantana is not that good, because one of the guys he picked, who the actor is Ben Foldyke as Cyrus West. I thought, I've seen him before, and I thought he was great. Mm-hmm. The guy who kept saying period, like, period. But I don't quite get what's happening in that scene. Like, we're supposed to see that Dantana is not as good, that and she's like, you're gonna use Jim's people from now on afterwards. But why is Will being an ass? Like, why is Will ignoring Mackenzie in his ear? It didn't feel justified to me or merited, and I couldn't understand. Like, is it just because he agrees with this unlikable guy or what? Like, I didn't feel like they explained what was happening.
No, I think that was a miss too. I kept trying to piece it together, and it was one of those kind of puzzle options that made me feel kind of dumb. And I don't think I should feel that way.
Yeah, and it's also something we've seen before.
Yeah,
right. Like, how many times can we go to the well of Will ignoring Mackenzie in his ear during the live broadcast? Like, nothing new came of it, and there were like, My best inference, which is definitely a guess, is that Will is punishing somebody. Mm-hmm. He's either punishing Mackenzie for bringing in this producer who brought in this crappy panelist who he doesn't like, or he just is like so much against the, I guess, liberal view that we shouldn't like randomly kill people and not worry about civilian death. But like those were my two analyses. Like, ignoring Mackenzie is to punish her for bringing in this producer. It also it feels weird to me that Mackenzie can just bring in a producer without getting Will to sign off ahead of time. Whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but that whole thing felt weird to me. And then we get Brian. We get to a maybe I don't know the most mysterious in a way that I didn't mind episode a scene of the episode. I speak, of course, of Don and Maggie's shared apartment. Don is quietly packing.
Mm-hmm.
In a scene that felt right, like he's trying to tiptoe around and then he makes a bunch of noise, which I feel like is what always happens when people are trying to be quiet when somebody's asleep. He bumped into something or whatever. And she's like, what is happening? And what we discover over the course of the scene is that Don has been sent a YouTube video of Maggie when she's yelling at the Sex and the City tour bus, professing effectively her love for Jim. In no way, by the way, diminishing what she clearly does feel for Don, in my opinion. People contain nuances, but he is offended by this. And I find Don's demeanor and attitude and dialogue in this scene fascinating. Like a different breed of human in some way. Like, in some ways he's too cocky.
Yeah.
In some way he's like, he's too good a guy, like too understanding or empathizing a guy for what we know of Don. It's hard for me to label exactly what he is in this conversation. And he's like, you know, all this time I was feeling bad that I wasn't in love with you. Like implying, but you weren't in love with me. And so like he's basically saying, we both suck. We're not right for each other. But he is so chill and cocky and confident about it. I watched that scene 4 times because I find Don bizarre in a way that I appreciate it. Like I don't know exactly what he's feeling. I don't know what the actor is trying to convey that he's feeling. I don't know what the character is feeling. But I think the actor's choices are intentional. And I find the whole thing like not surreal. But surprising, like a thing that you don't see a lot. That particular vibe is not a thing that you see a lot depicted on TV. And I was curious. I don't know. It meant something to me.
I appreciated it too. It doesn't, to me, make Don come across any nicer a person. There was a manipulativeness to the way that he pulled off his leaving that makes me feel icky inside. I feel like he... The way that he does it is he packs up and if he hadn't woken her up, he would have left her a note or sent her a text or something. And that makes Maggie so powerless that it removes her any chance to like have a conversation about it. And I think that that's kind of cruel and I don't like it. That being said, it did feel very human too, even though it felt like there's a little bit of like we're watching a serial killer or something, because they do feel like they're just one step removed from reality or like human connection. But like I don't know. I've never been in a situation where like in most breakups, it happens with one person breaking up with the other person. And so there is like a powerlessness that comes with being the person broken up with, but like, to do it so sneakily and to kind of like have a big old goofy grin on your face the whole time, that's what kind of makes it a little bit of an extra step away.
You've crystallized some of it for me, because I think that one thing is that he's being cowardly, right? And that he's trying to sneak out. He's trying to not have the conversation.
And selfish.
He got the information earlier. He's leaving seemingly not even in the middle of the night, but in the early wee hours of the morning. So like he's maybe even slept on it next to her.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's also, I think he believes two things that I don't agree with. One, that he's being a good guy about it, that he's being decent about it. And two, that either that he was wronged or that anything that he did that was wrong is now forgiven or off the books because she wronged him too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's Don's not exactly a villain on this show.
No.
But the best villains in fiction don't know they're villains, right? People are the heroes of their own story. They think they're acting well. Most of the time, humans aren't like, I'm being a real jerk. They're thinking like, I'm doing this. I'm right. I'm the aggrieved one, or I'm making the right call. And Don is doing that in a really believable way in this scene. And he's wrong. He's wrong on a couple different things. But I thought it was such a good performance, even though I didn't like what was happening in the scene. Mm-hmm. Although I think we're supposed to be excited too. Like, now she's going to be available for a gym. Like, now we right. can do it. And so here's my expectations. And I could be very wrong, but I truly have no idea what comes next. Either Jim's going to meet somebody on that tour bus, or he's going to come back and be unavailable, or he's going to decide not to come back. He's like, no, this is important. I've got to cover this Romney mm-hmm. campaign. Or he's going to come back and not be sure. He's like, yeah, I don't like, you're only interested now because Don dumped you. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
But it's not going to be smooth sailing until the end of the season. And then I'm sure it'll be the sailingest of smoothness or something.
I think, well, something else is going to happen.
You like, think? That is a bold prediction.
Well, I mean, like, some external force is going to drive these two apart. We know she ends up in Uganda at some point, and some really bad stuff happens there. Like,
good point.
They're going to be driven apart before they're driven back together.
Wow. Beautifully said. It's like I'm co-hosting with Sorkin.
But Jim's driving himself because he's not on the bus.
Right? Right? The episode ends... Well, we're back with the lawyers. We're back with Marcia Gay Harden. And now Mackenzie is talking to them, seemingly for hours and hours late into the night.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. Like, there cannot be a reason they have to do that. Even if, like, a trial is coming soon, which doesn't seem like the case. It seems like they're simply investigating what's going on. But I do not understand exactly what's going on with Mackenzie in that scene. They don't explain it. It's clearly going to stretch over other episodes, which is fine. And she's like, I know that Will is waiting right outside those doors, which doesn't have to be a secret. He could just tell her that he is. Mm-hmm. And then he's sitting asleep on the floor outside, which, like, is, I guess, supporting her in some weird way.
Right. Maggie's out there too, sitting on the floor. Yeah,
I thought it ended a little off. Like, I don't need closure in every episode of a serialized TV show, but like it's the same as Lost at its worst, especially given that this show, The Newsroom, did not premiere in the age of binge watching. To your point, they did not release the first three episodes at once. And I think that a benefit of streaming TV in the modern era is if you really want to know, you can watch the next episode, right? They're teeing it up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some shows will end a season with cliffhangers or whatever, but an episode that ends with a cliffhanger, if you have the time and interest, you can watch the next one right away. And this doesn't feel like a good enough mystery or confusion to stretch. Like, it feels like it's not being done the right way. So I'm hoping that clears up. So I was expecting Brian to come in being blown away by season 2 episode 1, and it was fine. It felt a lot like season 1. Like, it also felt different, but the annoyances felt similar. I think that on the whole, though, I liked this episode. If I'm averaging the episodes of season 2, of which I've seen 1, I liked it better than the average episode of season 1 thus far. So I thought it was better than an average season 1 episode.
I think there's very few moments.
That was the worst possible way to say that.
There's very few moments in this episode where I felt like people were acting like idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie acting like a sexist is kind of, he's playing to type right now. By the way, I love that he doesn't really watch any of the shows. I think that cracks me up. He still tells everybody, great show, but he doesn't watch any of them.
Yeah.
Which,
by the way, rings incredibly true to me, only in that... You know, I spent many years working, I guess I still work in podcasting to a degree, but working with the talent agents in podcasting, none of whom have ever listened to a podcast from any of their talent ever. Like, they know nothing. It's so funny. So that felt believable to me.
But the relationships felt real, and I don't think anybody acted wildly outside of how you might expect an actual human to act. So it could be that we're stuck in a weird plot right now, and we might hoist ourselves out of it at some point. I'm maintaining optimism here, and I like the puzzle that we're in. I just would have liked to feel a little bit smarter by the end of this episode.
I appreciate what you're saying. I think it's funny that you're like, we're stuck in this mystery. They don't have to be, but they wrote it. Like, we have to, because it's what they put on the page and then on the screen. But like you, I liked it, and I'm with you. I will choose to remain optimistic. There's a TV show that I was reminded of just a tiny bit, even though this has nothing to do with it. But there was a show that I loved, I think an ABC series that lasted for 2 seasons, called Murder One. And the first season of Murder One, it was a Stephen Bochco series. The whole idea was it was covering one court case from beginning to end. One crime, one trial. not like all the serialized TV, the episodic TV of the era, like a Law and Order thing where it's all wrapped up. It was one case across the whole thing. It's where I first met the actor Stanley Tucci.
Legend.
And he was so good on it as a creepy weirdo. And I was the second season, they pivoted. They changed out some of the lead actors. Not as the same character. They introduced some new characters and got rid of the main character. And they said, we're going to cover three cases instead. So it'll be like seven episodes per case. And there's something that felt like this. It's not clear to me exactly what's different about the newsroom right now. Because it's still like, hey, here's the news we're covering. But it feels like the big thing is the story arc has a mystery element to it where we don't fully know what's going on. Yeah. Like usually we know what's happening, at least through the eyes of our characters. But now at least the future of them know more than we do. And we've been given glimpses, right? We know that Maggie's hair is going to change. We don't know why. We know Uganda's coming up, but we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely feels like a different spin on the show, but not one that's yet making it in one episode measurably better. It's different, but subtly so.
Yeah.
Like me.
Like the two of us. Different.
Yeah.
Just subtly.
I do love your shirt today, Brian. Man, oh man, it's fantastic.
You're having a good hair day.
Listeners, you'll have to trust me. I don't know if that's true. But I don't know. I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah, me too.
That's one thing the show has going for it, even when I'm not loving it. And I didn't not. I liked this. I'm in like with this episode, but I want to know what's going to happen.
It's got some great characters. Supposedly, there's a lot of new characters being introduced in this season. There was some like vignette about that on HBO or on Max, pardon me. But I didn't watch it because I didn't want any spoilers. So I guess we'll have some more people we're getting introduced to. That'll be fun. Aside from, what's the guy's name? Terry. No, Jerry.
Jerry Dantana.
Which I like that actor, by the way. So
yeah, he was good. He was good. And the actor's name is Hamish Linklater.
Oh, nice.
And apologies if I mispronounced either parts of those, because it's possible that I did. Hamish? Could be Hamish. Hamish? But the next episode is called The Genoa Tip.
Oh, okay.
So that's clearly going to... We're clearly not going to abandon the opening mystery, which, thank goodness. Of course, our thanks to The Incomparable being the home of Sorkin in it. You can support The Incomparable by going to theincomparable.com/members. If you do that, you can choose to allocate some of your funds to us. We still got to reimburse Brian for logic.
We're making progress, though, folks.
We're getting there. We're chipping away. And, feel free to rate and review. Follow us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't yet, or whatever podcast app you use. But rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, because it's the only one that matters.
We appreciate it, folks. And reach out to us on Mastodon or Threads or your social network of choice. Just look for us. LinkedIn. You can send Lex a LinkedIn request. He'll probably accept
Pebble us if you want.
Pebble us? No. R.I.P.
But you know what you can do? No matter what, without any hesitation, dear listener.
What's that?
You can keep Sorkin in it.
Yes.
Boom. Nailed it.